Yo, what's up, everybody? We're back. Episode 15. Can you believe it? It's 15 already. I feel like it's our quinceañera. Wow, the time just flies by when you're a white dude doing a podcast. it's true. I haven't been recording in a while. I've had a terrible sinus infection. You can probably hear it. I'm like coughing. We might have some coughing breaks on the show. I'm starting to feel kind of human again, and just in time, actually, because Voyager has been really busy. We've been doing a bunch of events. For those of you who came out to the Regalis Gourmet Buffet on the 9th, you're fucking welcome for that shit. That was amazing. That was, despite losing my voice entirely that night, that was one of the more fun nights I've had here. Just watching people cram literally like hundreds of dollars of caviar into Dan Van Wright's mouth all night was, I don't know if I was getting turned on or just having gratitude for Voyager. I don't know. It was great. We ate tons of amazing cheese. We had truffles. We had caviar, salumis, wines. It was insane. And then 4 days later, we did the Riesling and Szechuan event, and that also was, I don't know. It was great. Szechuan, the restaurant Szechuan is probably my favorite place in the city to get food. And not just like Chinese food, but just food in general. That place is awesome. And we're going to do one of those events again. It was powerful. Food was gone in like 2 hours. And I will say this, I felt like a rapper. I like ordered like $600 of food from Szechuan and never looked back. It was great. There's the coughing fit happening. Yeah, I am looking back. It's true. We will not be stopped this month, though. Voyager is embarking on a new adventure. It's only about, as of this recording, about 9 days in the future. Sunday, October 30th, on Devil's Night. Ooh. A night of trickery and danger, seances, and, psychic stuff. We're doing a pop-up dinner here. It's going to be pretty wild. Some people have been asking me, how are you doing a pop-up dinner at a wine bar that doesn't have a kitchen? That's a really good question. And we're going to figure it out. Actually, we already have it pretty much figured out. We have a grill. We have induction burners. We have air fryers. We have steam wells. We have all the technology at our fingertips. We're going to transform the back bar into a kitchen. And we're going to be serving up some really amazing food. If you're wondering what the hell I'm talking about, go to our Instagram page. You'll see a post. Actually, fuck that. We're here to talk about it today. I have a special guest with me today. One of the chefs for the upcoming dinner, Alexis Burgos, is here. And I'll introduce him to you in a minute. But the dinner is called Gato Nero. It's a kind of a mashup between Italian and Argentinian cuisines with wine pairings. And I don't know. I'm super excited about this. I've been kind of dreaming about doing this event for a while. For those of you who don't know me very well, or maybe have only known me through Voyager, my kind of pathway to opening Voyager was doing regional Italian pop-up dinners. And so I got really involved in doing kind of these off-the-cuff kind of immersive, like, performance dinner kind of things. And it's really fun for me. It's a way to kind of be, like, I don't know, really artsy and fartsy with culinary and wine things. This one is going to be really special, just because I haven't done one of these things in a while. The chefs that are working together kind of just met each other, other than the two ladies from Strega. So yeah, it's going to be Katie Gabbert and Samantha Sandrin from Strega with my good friend Alexis Burgos, who is a chef originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina. He is a current resident of Milwaukee. He lives in Harambe with his family. Our kids go to school together, and that's kind of how we met each other. Turns out we have a lot of commonalities. We have long ginger hair and ginger beards and, freckly faces, love for wine. I love food. You can tell. I live for this shit, man. And you do too. Ladies and gentlemen, viewers, podcast friends, Milwaukeeans, I introduce to you Chef Alexis Burgos. Hello. Anytime. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. You're a fun-loving criminal. He's not a criminal. Okay, he's just an immigrant. They're not all criminals. Okay. Despite what fucking you know, some of them are very good people. Alexis, you came here from Argentina. When did you come here?
What? 2010. In the region of Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago was. I was there for 5 years.
What were you doing there during those 5 years?
My goodness, I was like, you know, it's very far. It's very far.
Yeah. It's a completely different season. Yeah. You're like going from winter to summer.
We're all seasons.
Yeah.
Food wise, I mean, like, just looking at food is a difficult. Like, the things that are eating here is how we eat. It took me a long time to understand, to embrace the culture, to learn to love what is happening here. And there's so much to know. I love the culture. I love the American.
What's your favorite thing about America? If you could like distill it down into like, and it's a really dumb question, but like, what do you love about being here that you don't have back home?
You know, I mean, it's been the last 10, 12 years here, so I have fortunate and great friendships that I have with you. And this is one of the things that is angering me here right now. There is obviously other things, like economic costs to me.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
It's hard to come, like, I just really myself along here in Milwaukee. And what I love is the community that is here. It's different from what I experienced in the areas where I was in England. Here feels more like a home.
Okay.
In a different place, you know? It's completely different, but it still feels like a home inside. So I think I can really accurate the community, especially in Milwaukee.
Yeah, okay. That's a great answer. I thought you were going to say maybe the weed was better. But, you know, maybe I'm the superficial one here. Well, that's cool. So you've been here for 12 years now. That's not a short amount of time. I know you're a big culinary person. In Argentina, you did some training to become a chef, and you were working as a chef, as a caterer, you were doing like a bunch of stuff, right? Like you were kind of like just hustling, right?
Oh man, it was like, it wasn't my long to stop. I remember going to culinary school when I was a kid. You know, I had like 3 jobs. I started working in culinary school. I started working in caterers. I started going on caterers. I was working as a bartender for events. It was not like I can now be anymore. I was just like, I don't know. But I was about a 17, 18-year-old kid.
Invincible.
Yeah. I was eating in the world. I was learning.
Yeah.
Things,
yeah.
But I worked in hotels. I worked in five-star hotels. I had my own kid with a friend. We expanded that, and I started a small restaurant with another friend. We did that for a while. But at the same time, I was also doing different things. I couldn't sleep in 1 or 3 hours.
I do know the feeling. It wasn't so long ago that I was still like that, like way too late in life. What kind of restaurant was it? Like, what were you guys cooking? What were you doing?
This is why. Like, these concepts just don't exist here. You know, like,
okay.
The way, you know, how kind of cooking into the US has changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything like
that. Right.
It was a similar search, you know, at the same time, or in fact, to New York, it's the same time, and then we went to Buenos Aires.
So they brought Pizza Hut.
Well, I mean, no.
I think we both have the same. We both have the same goal. Like, it's just crazy, dude. School in session. It's nuts. I know. We're like, we're both gonna like. You're gonna hear our deaths on this show. Yeah, it, like there's a huge Italian influence in Buenos Aires in particular, but maybe Argentina in general. I mean, just over the course of the last 100 years, and then really, I think ramping up after World War II, probably especially, was probably another big wave. Or
yeah, it was insane. It was a huge turnout of immigrants, mainly from. So we have this whole Italian culture that lasted 6 years, and that is nearly.
Right.
Yeah. So really cool. You know that. Like,
yeah.
That's good, you know. And we were doing some of those things. And there was some kind of side of a recording studio, a music studio.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah, it was like a rock type of concept, but we were doing like, and we were doing all these from scratch, we were doing pieces from scratch.
Cool.
We're doing all the whole class of cooking on it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, we pizzas, some pasta dishes, some rice dishes, some hamburgers, the way we did it. And honestly, that's the biggest thing.
You can't, dude, you can't. Yeah, I know, man. You can't make a cheeseburger, a hamburger. You can't find a good one overseas, outside of America, I'm just telling you. I think that's the problem, because like, I think maybe in some cases to make a great American cheeseburger, you have to have shitty beef, or like you have to have like something like the stuff that you don't want to actually just put on a plate and eat as its own thing, like almost how like a. It goes to an extreme with a place like McDonald's, because it's like, when we say this all the time, it's like McDonald's cheeseburgers don't taste like cheeseburgers, they taste like McDonald's.
Yeah.
But like, if you extrapolate that out a little bit, and it's not that far of a leap, like American cheeseburgers taste like cheeseburgers just because they're from here. And like, it takes a certain amount of non-Karen Truss.
We are not.
Yeah. You know, when, so like my wife Brandis like first noticed you and your wife at school, at our kids' school, and she thought that you guys were from Denmark. And because your wife Samantha is like kind of tall and lanky with long blonde hair, and like, and you're like a ginger person, like, and you had like these like cool kind of modern like clear glasses frames on, you have long hair now, but you had like shorter hair that was kind of styled. You did look Danish. I'll give her that. She told me that you were Danish, and I was like, oh, that's cool. There's like a couple from Denmark at the school. That's awesome. And then like we finally met you guys, and I was like, oh, she's from Libertyville, Illinois, and he's from Buenos Aires. And honestly, my first time going overseas anywhere was to Argentina. And I went there with my church as a missionary to Argentina. I didn't convert you. I didn't missionary position you or anything. I was a terrible missionary. I was out of position. All the time. But I have a lot of kind of really vivid memories of that trip. But the first one was our first night there. We went to a steakhouse and we had beef. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was like 16 or 17. And my parents, like, when my parents would take me out to a restaurant, it was like Ponderosa or the Chancery or like the Chinese buffet. Like, I maybe an Olive Garden. Like, that was like a big deal. But I'm at this Argentinian steakhouse in Buenos Aires, and I was like, well, I don't know what's good here. And they're like, just get a steak. And I was like, cool, like, I'll get a steak. And I don't think they asked me what temp I wanted it or anything. They were like, oh, stupid American here, you have it like this. And I remember cutting into this piece of beef and just like my whole plate filling with blood. And I was like, wow, this is crazy, dude. But I'm a good traveler. And I, even then, even as a teenager, I was like, all right, like, I'm going to eat this. Like, I cannot be that kind of American. I have to eat this food. And I ate the whole steak. I drank the blood. I did it all. And yeah. Turns out the cow was the missionary to me, actually. I remember walking back to the hotel and literally seeing like trails of light. Like, my body had never had grass-fed beef. My whole existence, I had never had grass-fed beef. It was only corn-fed, who knows, Tyson, whatever shit in America. McDonald's. I had only had McDonald's beef, probably. And I think I was tripping out. I literally was... Yeah, I was like seeing, like, my vision was like it was like crazy. I leveled up. Yes, I did. And I don't know. It was honestly, I think, like, culinarily wise, it was a flashpoint for me. It woke me up, and it showed me that there are things that people produce in other places that can change your entire perception of your life. And the other stuff, the Bible stuff, I don't remember any of that. Like, I really don't. I don't know. That one meal was, like, really transformative for me. And I want to go back. I want to go. We should go. I want to go back and eat some more food. And in the past few years, Argentina, culinarily wise, is back on the map. One of your heroes, Francis Mallmann, is rightly world famous these days, and not that he's ever been much of a slouch, but he's had episodes on Mind of a Chef and Chef's Table and all these things, and I think he's brought a lot of a bigger spotlight back to Argentina and Patagonia in particular. But I know that you've mentioned in the past that he's always been kind of an influence for you. He's kind of like a cultural icon, right? Like he's on the cooking shows. He's chiming in about this or that when it comes to food.
He's
ever present. He's a poet.
He's a poet.
Yeah.
There's a beauty of fire. You have to, you see them in the fire, right? You don't know the fire. You're in the flame, that's the beauty. You get mesmerized.
Yes.
You feel like a tree.
Yes.
There's also some wood in there. The food just changes the whole world. You eat, burn flavors, you don't burn hands today.
Yeah.
You have to eat, just stay going. I just love.
It's primal.
Yeah, I love to throw things on the fire. Just to have a little extra fermentation.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's so much romance in this movie, you know? I think it kind of reflects a little bit of human nature. You're here today, you're gone tomorrow. You know, the burning of that flame is the burning of all of us.
You know, not to get too off topic here, but when I was in a past life as an archaeologist and anthropologist studying in college, in this life in the past, I wrote an honors thesis about the role of fires in religious ceremonies in the Eastern Mediterranean and beyond. And part of my research was actually just kind of tracing a history of fire in a context of humanity and what fire has done for us. And it was like the controlling of fire from its earliest days was meant to help us in several ways. One was to provide us with protection at night against predators. And the other was to cook food. And what the cooking of food with fire did was it actually changed human physiology. It shortened our guts. It would take people so long to digest raw meat that like you'd have to sit around for hours and hours and hours to digest. Which left you vulnerable to other predators. But with cooking of meat and cooking of plant matter, the fire pre-digests a lot of those harder fibers and harder muscles that take time for your body to break down. Fire essentially made everything fast food for us. Like, you could kill an animal, butcher it, grill whatever you wanted to, and pick that up and eat it as you were hunting herds of other animals. And it enabled our species to evolve to what we are now. So there's, when you're like, what do you feel like when you sit in front of a fire? You're actually feeling the most primal part of being a human animal.
Generational
feel of safety. Yeah, warmth and light and protection and the ability to like taste the bounty of your work. And I don't know, like, we don't have to get too like an NFL commercial. Yeah, I feel like we're in a Home Depot commercial right now. Doers get more done. But no, there is something really like connective about cooking with a live fire. And you know, Argentina and Malmen are like kind of in this perfect moment in like our sort of culinary consciousness right now. And I think it's beautiful. And meeting you and talking with you, and I go to your house sometimes like during the summer and you've got your grill going and you're just like, oh yeah, like it's like, try this. And you just like hand me this piece of like hot meat and I'm like, oh, all right. Like this dude from Argentina made this meat. I'm going to fucking eat this shit. And I'm like, wow, this is really delicious. Like, what is this? And you're like, oh, it's a kidney. Or like, this is like a, you know, this piece or that piece, or this is like a skirt steak, or this is a, like, a bit that people throw away. But if you cook it like this, it's actually really good. And I love that.
We have to make it.
Here they chop them all up with the eyeballs and the buttholes and they put it in a bacon double cheeseburger and, you know, you order it, you eat it in your car and you don't even realize it. I think that's why they're so good. Because they got so many buttholes and brains and stuff. My first job at like a real restaurant, and many of you know this from this show, was at Hinterland in Milwaukee here. With Dan Van Wright as a chef. And I went from being a corner tap bartender at Blackbird to being like a server at this place that was serving veal brains and sweetbreads and duck heart skewers and all kinds of wild shit. And there was elk on the menu and like tartars, and it was like that was a really big jump for me, coming from like Pabst and a shot of Jameson to veal brains and sweetbreads, but I knew that working there it was expertly prepared, and it knowing that, like, I felt like freedom to try more of those products. And you kind of feel like you're in like a secret club when you're like, oh, brains are good. And like, you know, hearts are really good. And like all these organs are actually really good if they're made right. And simply, you know, like it doesn't take much. It just takes time and a little technique. And you can transform something that you'd think you'd never, ever want to put in your mouth into something that you just kind of constantly want more of. We've lost a lot of respect for animals in our kind of like in the last probably couple hundred years of like mass population growth and like industrialization of things. And you know, again, kind of going back to some of my studies, I remember reading about what an actual Greek sacrifice entailed. They would bring like a white cow to this, like, through this big parade, and people would be like showering this cow with, like, they'd be like petting it as it walked through the crowd and like kissing it and like throwing garlands of flowers around its neck and like, you know, really like giving this cow some worship, some love, some appreciation. And the cow would get to the altar and they would first snip off a little bit of hair from the kind of like mane on the back of its neck as kind of like a pre-sacrifice, like a, like, you know, a gesture of holiness. And then they would take a little bit of oats and one of the priests would crush it in his hand and hold it under the cow's snout so that the cow would bow its head to eat the grain out of this priest's hand. And that head nod was taken as permission for the knife. And the knives would come out and two knives would slit the cow's throat and it would instantly bleed out and die on the altar. And then it was divided and shared amongst the people and the priests. But yeah, there's definitely, I think I feel a small return to this sort of veneration and this respect. You see this on like TV shows and cooking shows and things now more and more. And I think it's important. And I think that the people in your culture who have been raising cattle on grasslands for generations and generations have had the right idea the whole time. I want to ask you in regards to this dinner, Gato Nero, it's coming up Sunday the 30th, if you didn't catch that at the beginning of the show. Chef Burgos, my friend, what are you excited about? Like, what? I know you've been planning, you've been like experimenting with dishes. Like, what are you excited about for this dinner? Like, is it the collaboration? Is it just kind of like, I don't know. Like, what is it for you? Like, what's?
Yes, it is. Like, chaos and chaos. I mean, creativity, explosion.
Mm-hmm. These ladies are like, they're like, yeah, they're like.
The relationship is incredible. This is what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to start a conversation. I'm looking forward for people to come here to Boyle, to your house.
It's
gonna be our house.
It's gonna be our house.
I want people to feel like they're
hell yeah, brother. Yeah, I feel like you're bringing some flavors from your childhood, from where you're from your past, your studies, your, yeah.
From the mother.
Yeah, exactly.
No, what we're doing is, you know when you go to your mother's house, you know, she makes you a meal, and she's like, how is this made? Is it because the meal is off? Is it because of the service that your grandma is providing you?
Played it yourself.
It's because of the way you feel about the environment, it's embraced you when you get there. And I also really like to create an environment so that, you know, I can see the dinner on the table. I want everybody to enjoy.
Yeah.
Translate what I love into a dish that you can know. And it's okay if you don't.
Yeah.
I think you will.
I think they will too, man. Like, this menu is, we had a meeting about this a few nights ago, and I don't know, like, I was a little nervous before the meeting. I was like, I don't know what the theme is, I don't know what's going on here. The menu is fucking wild. It's gonna be so many intense flavors. Like, I'm so excited. I think seeing what you and Katie and Samantha are bringing to the table for this dinner, it just, to me, it feels inspired. It feels seasonal and festive in a way, but it also feels like it harkens back to like some traditional flavors being shown in new ways. I just, you know, I I feel lucky to be in a position to work with, I want to say you youngsters. You're not that much younger than me. But like, you guys are approaching this dinner with a sense of like youthful energy for some of these plates and presentations, and like, I am really excited to just be a part of it and plate it up and serve it to people. Luckily for me, I get to be a little bit more like front of house oriented for most of this, and I'm gonna relish some of the smiles and the oohs and ahs. There's gonna be tricks and treats throughout the dinner. We're billing it as an 8-course. It's more of like actually like a 10-course. I just bought the wines today, and I will tell you straight up, I have spared no expense on these wines. They're going to be absolutely phenomenally delicious. The dishes themselves are in some cases like a mashup of Argentinian and Italian flavors. Some dishes are just more straight up Italian and more straight up Argentinian. It's kind of just like it's a free for all of like this like celebration of like the Italian immigrants to Argentina and just kind of everybody hanging out eating good food. Like I don't know. I'm just jazzed. I'm just jazzed, man. Yeah.
He said we would be given that. There's more happiness in giving than in getting to receive, right? At least it's just what visual, it's just what gets, you know, and I can tell you, like, getting stuff the same way.
Yeah.
You want to share something that's inside us.
Yeah, they're really like, I think, from what I've seen, I think you would agree, it's like a, if you've ever dined at Strega and when they were in the Third Street Market Hall, you'll know that like Katie and Sam have kind of consistently pushed boundaries in their own sort of craft, but also in like what showing you what Italian food can be. And this is a dinner for them where they have no parameters. So if you want to come to this dinner, there are some seats available. It's going to be pretty limited. It's going to be intimate. It's going to be a little spooky. It's going to be very delicious. It's going to be warm. It's going to be convivial, conversational. It's going to be, I don't know, just really fun. There are tickets available. If you want a ticket for this, you can come to Voyager and purchase them with your bartender. Tickets are $175 per person, and that does include wine pairings. So dinner and drinks are included. We also have an ability for you to buy tickets via the Voyager website. Go to voyagermke.com. You can click on the you can click on the shop online button on the top right of the screen. It'll bring you to like our Clover page, which is a little janky, not gonna lie. If you're on your phone, you might have to scroll down to find the dinner. You can click on that and just pay right online. Get a ticket for you and your SO or whatever. It's going to be great. We'd really encourage you guys to come by and hang out with us tonight, that night. You know me. I like to party. Afterwards, we'll probably pop open some cool bottles of some stuff and just relax and hang out together. Yeah, doesn't it? Sounds cool. Alexis, what, like, do you have any final thoughts? Like, anything you want to, like, really, like, tell people about yourself? Wow. I don't know. Like, wow. What's I know I'm throwing you a curveball here, but like,
Yeah, such a role.
I know. Yeah. You say it now. Alexis has been cooking food for his whole life, but in Milwaukee, he's been like directing kitchens and doing food programs for hospitals. So like for him, this is a really cool and like relaxed way to kind of get to know you all and like prepare some food for you from his heart, from his soul, from the heart of his bottom, whatever. From his kidneys to the kidneys on your plate. Come by and hang out with us. It's going to be rad. I'm even going to have dry ice. So, you know, it'll be rad. Costumes are optional. Let's just have some fun and eat some good food.
See you guys
on Devil's Night. Not so bad. Actually, I like the idea of them. I rarely have enough time in a car to like. It's actually not true. I'm just a shitty podcast listener. Yeah, I do that too.